Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Big thanks to Earl Forsey for getting us up to date on Grant and Danny whenever we talk baseball. These segments are provided by Waldorf Honda, the first and largest remote car delivery dealership for sales and service in the DMV area. Waldorf Honda has kept it simple. Visit their website, waldorfhonda.com. We'll get back into the Redskins because of the breaking story Danny just mentioned, where the Post is reporting they could change their name before the start of this season, which seems really surprising. And to me, I don't know how they'll pull it off, but we'll discuss that coming up in a few, and we can kind of spitball on the air and try to figure that out together. But I want to get to the Mattress Warehouse Hotline and talk to a local guy done really well, Brandon Geyer, who played his high school ball in Northern Virginia at Herndon High School in Herndon, Virginia, before going to the UVA campus to play for the Cavaliers, or the Hoos, as Danny likes to call them. Mm. Brandon Geyer, first at bat, I still remember, BG, you're at Camden Yards. You're taking on the Orioles. Zach Britton is on the hill. I'm excited to see you get called up. He throws a sinker inside. I think it was like the second inning or something. And you yank it over the left field fence. You got like 10 people in the crowd cheering for you, a bunch of your high school buddies. When you look back on that day, now that you've just decided this week that you're going to hang up the cleats, I mean, what's going through your mind as you sprinted around the base paths? I think you set a record for the speed from home plate to home plate.
First off, thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, man, when I was running those bases, I don't know how I didn't trip. I literally thought I was on a cloud running in a dream. It was nuts. But the one thing when I think about that day, and, you know, I'm still not over it, and I'll never forgive Lindsay, really, is she missed that because she was she had a 6 p.m., I think, sportscast for Fox. So she was in the parking lot and didn't get to see it. So I'm still holding that against her a little bit. But, you know, that is what it is. You can't do anything about that. The traffic happens, right? But yeah,
I've been in that traffic. That's that Baltimore Washington Parkway traffic. And our listeners know his wife very well, because Lindsay Murphy used to be on Fox 5 here in town. But imagine that, though, Danny. You get called up to the show after years of grinding in the minor leagues, and in the second inning, you get your first at bat, and your first AB is a bomb, and she wasn't there to see it.
Perfect.
Yeah. So we had always talked about like that moment when I get called up, just calling her, and she'll be like, "Oh, no matter where it is, I'll be there, you know, I'll get there." And then it worked out. The team, you know, my call-up is in Baltimore. She's like, "Oh, wow, can't work out any better. I don't have to fly anywhere, no problem." Boom, what happened? She's literally in the parking lot listening to it on the radio when it happens. I'm like, "You got to be kidding." But obviously I had no idea at the time. I thought she was there. When I touched on plate and kind of pointed up and saw all my people, I just assumed she was there. She wasn't. It makes for a good story, though, right?
Well, I think I've got this right, Grant. It's tough to find data on this, but I think I have this. Fastest home-to-home time in history is Deion Sanders. Second fastest, Brandon Geyer. Home run, not inside the park variety, though, was that homer that he hit against the Baltimore Orioles. Sprinted around and got some nice ripping for it. But that's an amazing story, dude. I want to see things like that. I want to see debuts. I want to see fun, you know, kids coming up, first at bats, and all the usual sort of pomp and circumstance that happens with Major League Baseball. We might not. This is such a weird time, a weird year. What's your take, Brandon, on what's going on with what's happening with the sport right now?
Yeah, you know, when they came out with the agreement and, you know, they decided that they're going to have a second spring training here and get everything underway, you know, I felt great. You know, everything was taken care of. Now that you see everything going on with, you know, some of the testing with the teams not really going through on time, I don't know the whole story, just kind of what you read on the internet. You see these guys popping up with testing positive. I don't know. I feel like it's up in the air. Obviously, I hope that they play, and I want to watch some baseball and cheer on my buddies and see what happens. But with what's happening, it's tough. You know, there's a lot on the line, not just play for a championship, but obviously there's money involved in the business, all that. So much goes into it. But, you know, obviously you hope for the players and family's sake that everyone can just stay healthy and it doesn't get too bad. But, yeah, just I don't know what you guys feel like, but I just kind of feel like it's really up in the air right now.
Yeah, the last couple of days have been difficult and give me a little bit more pause. So Brandon Guyer's with us on Grant and Danny. Played with the Rays and the Indians. Who would you say was the most talented player, if you had to choose one, that you played with? And maybe it's someone, you know, maybe it's not the best player in terms of stats or something, but the guy that always just kind of made you marvel and someone maybe we take a little bit for granted publicly, do you think?
Man, I played with some good ones. In Tampa, I'm going to go with, because I played alongside him for a while, and on the defensive side of the ball, I just don't think there's anyone better in the game. And that's Kevin Kiermaier, KK. Just what he would do on a daily basis, man. He is just freakishly gifted. He works hard on his craft, but he's a big dude, probably like 220, faster than everyone on the field. The plays he makes, and he just it's really unbelievable. I got to see it firsthand on a daily basis. I know everyone sees the highlights and whatnot, but just to be up front and get to see that, his talent, everything, I'm going to say him for the Rays. And for the Indians, there's so many guys. I mean, I'm going to have to say two, Lindor and Jose Ramirez. They're just
Ramirez is crazy to me because he went from, like, I don't want to say obscurity, but he was just a dude, and then he all of a sudden – you couldn't get him out. Like, he was just the man.
Yeah. And it's nuts just, like, looking at his stature and everything. But it's just so funny. Like, honestly, when I was playing against him with the Rays and all the games we played against him, I just – something, the way he carried himself, I'm like, man, this dude's cocky. I just don't like anything about him. But then I got traded over there, and he's, like, the nicest dude ever in the clubhouse. And that's just how he is. He's not trying to be cocky. That's just literally – who he is, and it's not a front, it's not a persona, that's just him. But yeah, just getting to see that strut walk up to the plate all those times, all those games I saw, and it was just so much talent there from both sides of the plate, him and Lindor. Defensive side of the ball, they're each gold glove caliber. I'm pretty sure Lindor's won a couple. I don't know about Jose. But, yeah, I'm going to go with those guys. They stand out to me. Obviously, there's so many other guys. I'm probably missing someone. But top of my head, those are probably the most talented.
Brandon, I think you came up at a very unusual time. I think you're old enough to remember the way it used to be and got to experience the way it is. And here's what I mean. It used to be a big deal when someone had a player that would throw 95. Like, I'm old enough to remember where, like, this guy throws in the mid-90s, and that was, like, the fireballer. And that was, like, the one guy on the roster usually had a mustache and bad hair. Now, like, soft-tossing lefties throw 95. I think stuff is nastier than it has ever been. So just speak to that over the course of your baseball career, both the amateur level and then getting up into the show. I think pitching, I think people, it's an underrated part of what people talk about when they're talking about hitters and the fly ball revolution and kind of the all-or-nothing approach. I think you have to do it because of how nasty pitching has become.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It is filthy, and it just keeps getting better and better, which you don't really know how it can, but somehow they find a way to get better. But, yeah, it used to be you try to get the pitch count up and get the starting pitcher out, gets to the bullpen, but it's like pick your poison. You get to the bullpen, every guy most of the time is throwing 96 to 100, I feel like, nowadays. And not only are they doing that, but they're throwing their off-speed almost as much as their fastball. So you got guys throwing that hard. So, like, yeah, you're going to be looking for fastball and time it up. But then nowadays they throw so many off-speed pitches that you can't just really sit on that. And they don't just throw them to make you chase. They throw them for strikes. So it's like you go up to the plate, you almost have to guess which pitch is coming because they mix it up so much along with the high velo. It's just, it's better than it's ever been. And yeah, man, it's a challenge. Even, you know, those guys, they can pinpoint it too. It's not like they're just throwing it and it's just, all right, here, I'm throwing it hard, wherever it goes, you're still not going to hit it. But a lot of these guys can pinpoint it at that speed too, which is just, it's crazy, man. It's baseball's always been the toughest sport in the world, and it just keeps getting harder and harder for those hitters.
Brandon Guyer, Herndon High School, UVA, of course, a lengthy stay in the big leagues, played in the World Series. Danny was put on this planet to have piercing eyes and to hit left-handed pitching, and those are the two. And he's that and chew bubble gum, and he's all out of bubble gum.
He's all out
at
of
this
gum.
Point. Brandon, before I let you go, what are you going to do now? I mean, I just saw this week, within the last couple days before I hit you up, that you were stepping away from the game. So, what's next?
Yeah, so very, very excited, pumped, and passionate about my next chapter. Starting an online training platform. It's called Fully Equipped Athlete. And basically what it is, I'm really just trying to work with athletes, get the word out to them that what this is. And it's basically one-on-one sessions with me to help them excel on and off the field. Basically throughout my career, there were 10 foundational tools that I really tried to master to help make the most of my talent. And nowadays I just feel like so many people really focus on the physical side, get as strong as you can as a hitter, work on launch angle, change all your swing. But there's no way just having that you'll make it. You need a strong mindset. You need a good lifestyle. You need that passion. You need that heart. So the 10 tools I go over, you know, starting with humility, mindset, functional training, recovery, nutrition, goal setting, breathing, which is one of my favorite and I think most important tool. And then there's routine, support system, passion. So I really just want to work with these athletes, have them read a what I call a playbook. It's an 80-page ebook, and just help them succeed, not just on the field, but all this stuff will really help their life off the field too. It helped guide me to the big leagues and stay there for 7 years. So I really feel strongly that this is going to help a lot of athletes. And, yeah, as you can tell, I'm really passionate about it. Been putting a lot of work into the platform and can't wait to see what happens.
Brandon, thank you, buddy. Good luck with that. And I really appreciate you joining us today, buddy. Stay well.
Yeah, thank you guys so much. Take care.
Thanks, pal.
Yeah, be well. That's Brandon Guyer. And he's the kind of guy, whatever he's doing, he'll be a success at it. He just works, man. He may not have been, you know, the most gifted player on the teams he was on, but he seemed to always find his way back onto the field. You got to respect the heck out of that. Good catching up with him on G&D. Let's get into whether or not the Redskins could change their name before the start of the year. The Washington Post is saying that may well happen, which is pretty stunning. You're listening to The Fan. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back. We're with you today until 2 and each and every weekday until 2 o'clock ahead of Chad Dukes versus the world. Danny, right before the top of the hour, you saw a Les Carpenter story in the Washington Post that caught your attention, because the report is that the Redskins could actually be able to pull off a name change maybe before the start of the year. Now, you know I'm on record as saying I don't see how that's possible. It just seems unlikely to me. I feel like there's a lot that you have to get done. It's not as simple as just saying, okay, we're now, and I'll just pick the Red Tails. We're now the Red Tails, and here's our new logo. Think about all of the signage and the terminology everywhere and everything at the stadium and at the headquarters. I mean, the amount of work that has to be done, I feel like, is several weeks worth from the manpower just fixing logos that are at your facilities from that standpoint, let alone, I'm not sure about this, but I have to imagine you've got to get some type of trademark. You might have to pry the ability to call your team away from someone or pay for the ability to do it. I don't really know what name they're going to go with, obviously, or whether or not it is trademarked already. But you know how these squatters work, where years ago people were buying things up that the Redskins might be named so that they'd have to get some cash if the team did change its name. It just seems to me like this is a several months long process, not a bunch of days. But maybe I'm wrong about this.
Here's what I think you might be missing in terms of the ingredients. An announcement could be made. Doesn't mean that every sign in the stadium is going to say the right thing, or every jersey or every sticker or every website or rebrand. You know, that could be a slower rollout. An announcement made says this is what we will be called in the future. This is what we're picking. I think that may be the distinction, because you're right. It just, you don't have enough time to fix every sign at FedEx and every sign in Ashburn and every place where it says Redskins to change it to this new thing to walk around. You know, it's like spreading campaign posters around. You don't have time to get all of that done, rebranded, trademarked, printed, the whole nine yards. That stuff just takes a while. There's a human element there. Add in a pandemic, and it becomes doubly difficult to do so. But the announcement could come, and the reveal could come within the next couple of weeks, which would seem hasty, but they're trying to capitalize, I think the team is, on sort of this moment. They're trying to turn this, for lack of a better way to describe this, a negative into a, hey, look at us, pay attention to us, buy into us, praise us, talk about us sort of thing, right? They don't want that moment to pass. That's the sense I have from reading this article. And the quote that is jumping out here, this is, again, from Les Carpenter's story. Rivera said he hoped the new name would be in place by the start of the season. Though multiple people with knowledge of the situation said an announcement could come sooner, with at least one believing it could be revealed within the next 2 weeks. That's your sort of big takeaway from the story.
So that is an important distinction. So they announce we're going to be the Washington Grant and Dannys.
Yep.
And do they announce the logo at that time, or do we wait on the logo?
Great question.
Bet you we wait on the logo. They should wait on the logo and build some suspense at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess they could come out and say, here's our logo, the Washington G, and it's G and a D or whatever. My dumb question would be, is there any way they make an announcement of the team name next 2 weeks, next month, whatever, and then that isn't the name and logo for this whole football season?
Yes.
In other words, like they announce, we're going to be the Washington Grant and Dannys. We're going to be the Washington Red Tails, the Red Wolves,
yep,
whatever. But then this season, they're still in the Redskins jersey. They're still wearing that gear, or you know, maybe the terminology is different and they don't refer to themselves as that. They're the football club for this year or something. Is that possible? Because
yes.
I'm still having a hard time wrapping my head around. You see what I'm saying, which is the changing
exactly
of everything that needs to change.
I see exactly what you're saying. And I think the answer is yes. Meaning, take the heat off of us. We just didn't have time to print everything. We're going to be this new thing. We had a big announcement coming. That's a done deal, right? So it's not hanging over training camp. It's not hanging over preseason, and players aren't asking questions about it necessarily. You can come out with a very definitive thing. This is what we will be. As soon as we can get everything printed, that's what we're going to do, right? As soon as we can get everything rebranded and go to the press and the web and everything else, we'll have that done. The announcement is this is our plan. The actual, you know, tangible rubber meets the road, maybe further down the line to what you're talking about.
I've thought all along, and I'm just trying to put myself in Dan Snyder's mind, which is, you know, a tough place having talked to the guy for a total of maybe 3.5 minutes in my whole life. But I'm trying to think of what he's considering, and I have to imagine, how do I make the most money on all of this is part of it, okay? You could tell me that that's a jerk way to think, and maybe
it
is. But he's an owner of a organization who is being forced to change the name. He doesn't want to. And I think he's saying, okay, how do I get the most money? And to me, the most money might be if he's able to have another season where you make the announcement, you say, listen, we're going to do the right thing. We're going to change the name. We're going to appease the people that want us to change the name. We're going to appease our sponsors who don't want us to be the Redskins anymore. But it's going to take some time. We're going to make the announcement. And then you push the announcement back to build suspense. Like, if you just announce something 24 hours after people know an announcement's coming, as opposed to saying, we're going to make an announcement at the end of the football season, you're building up for a while the conversation. People like you and I are wondering, what's it going to be? People are guessing. People are getting invested and involved in that. But I've always kind of thought, I know that Nike and Target and Dick's and Walmart have decided they're going to stop selling the Redskins gear now. So maybe it rules my idea out. But you still have Fanatics, you still have NFL.com as the two places that have basically said, we'll be able to keep selling Redskins gear. Maybe if those other companies aren't going to, you can't make money anyway. But I thought all along, Danny, maybe he would think, well, let's do one more season as the Redskins while we pick the name and do this right and slow play this for next offseason. And that'll be a year to have everyone buy up their last Redskins merchandise. And then I've got next year when everyone's got to buy their new merchandise. It's basically 2 years of everyone in line to buy merch. That was always my thought. But I guess if you can't get in line at Nike or Target or Dick's, or you can't go to the website on Walmart and buy it, maybe his point is it's not worth having the Redskins stuff anyway.
Right. Yeah, I mean, this is a complicated thing, okay? And I'm at Funny Danny Grant at Grant H. Paulson. We just got a tweet. Is it possible this was in the works for months before all this? Yes is the answer. and even likely. You know what I mean? Like, there's a, you know, if because it turns out we just found out about the minority owners wanting out at the same time that the name is getting changed. That's already been in the works. We just sort of found out around the exact same time. So it's entirely possible there were planning phases to this and reasons and writing on the wall and things that maybe some smart people saw coming. So it's hard to tell what the exact timeline is. Because if they just started talking about this 2 weeks ago and they plan on having all the gear on the shelves come September 1st, that's a crazy turnaround. So that, I think that speaks to your point.
It's a good point, and I hadn't thought of it, but it's a great tweet. You know, maybe this is 3 months in the works. I'd be surprised by that because they've had so many other things going on during this pandemic that they were working on. And I don't know who is working on those things necessarily other than Rivera and company who are part of the football operation. But it's certainly possible. And I would be stunned if this all started when you and I started talking about it because the investors threatened to pull out. They obviously knew for at least a couple of weeks that was coming. And I'd imagine, to your point, it was well before that. Next, we're going to talk to Tom Shad of USA Today Sports, who helped lead an investigation that found that the Redskins' original Americans Foundation, which was founded by Dan Snyder in 2014, has been given less money to that cause over the years as they've gotten farther and farther away from 14, and last year apparently didn't give any money to that cause. We'll talk to Tom about that reporting next on Grant and Danny. G&D 106.7 The Fan. Tom Shad of USA Today Sports had a report that came out just before noon today. We wanted to track him down and get him on the air, and he's with us now, a longtime friend of the show. Used to cover the Skins here in town, as a matter of fact. The Redskins reviewed their name previously, and Dan Snyder decided that they were going to donate money to Native American causes and struck up a foundation. Tom did some reporting on that foundation and how much money they've kind of been investing to help the cause. And it sounds like the number has diminished over the years that they were donating. Tom, we appreciate the time. So just give us an idea of the, you know, how this all started in terms of the reporting and what you found out.
Yeah, so basically the reporting started late last week, kind of as this issue was bubbling back to the surface. Kind of thought back to the creation of that foundation and just started doing some digging around. You know, tax filings, they're called Form 990s, are available in any number of places online. And so I just started looking around at those, and I saw that in 1 year, I guess it would be the 2018 fiscal year, the foundation actually spent more money maintaining its staff than it did, you know, on actual charitable giving, which I thought was noteworthy and interesting. And then I did some more digging and got an even more recent financial record, and in that subsequent year, they spent $0 on charitable giving. So basically, they've still maintained a staff, and the organization is still active, you know, at least formally in the state of Virginia. But in that would be the 2019 fiscal year, they didn't give anything to Native American causes, at least financially.
Seems like a pretty good job to have there. Tom, it's not to totally say that the Redskins haven't done anything charity-wise, right? The Redskins Charitable Foundation has done a lot of good, including supporting our buddy Nick Sundberg's initiative that we happen to know about. They do a lot of good, but it seems like this specific focus, which was introduced with much bravado in 2014, you've seen a steady decline in the emphasis, spending, expenditures, and the good that this foundation is doing. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think all of that's accurate. And I'm glad that you drew the distinction there because, yeah, the team's charitable foundation, I think the formal name is Washington Redskins Charitable Foundation, yeah, they have continued to be very active, and they're spending, you know, seven figures a year in terms of donations and grants. This is kind of the separate entity, right? And this was the thing that in 2014 was supposed to just specifically, you know, benefit Native American causes. And they have, you know, even kind of within that organization, over time they have done quite a bit. You know, they've donated, you know, in the ballpark of $6.25 million over the years to various Native American causes. It's just that has really diminished, and you saw a large chunk of that kind of happen up front, kind of coinciding with the announcement that you mentioned was made with a lot of bombast by Dan Snyder, and then it's just kind of dropped off over time.
If someone says, well, $6 million is a lot, and they did some good things, and they should get credit for that, I mean, is the reaction, I guess, as simple as people stopped checking, or as it became less popular to talk about this, that they stopped doing it because they weren't basically being tracked. I mean, what is your reaction? What is your thought on that?
Yeah, I honestly have no idea. And kind of, you know, in reporting this and talking with a team spokesperson, you know, I was trying to figure out, you know, is there something that I missed more recently? You know, is there some sort of event or some sort of spending that just isn't showing up? And you know, the team did mention a couple events. They donated some eyeglasses to people on a reservation in South Dakota, some food and blankets. You know, in a couple of years back now, 3 years ago or something. You know, so they maintain that they are still doing things and that they have plans to, you know, kind of expand, you know, certain programs in the future. It's just that, you know, from the documentation that I was able to get, you know, in terms of hard evidence, you know, at least for that year, they didn't do any charitable giving.
Tom Shad with us here. Story in USA Today about the Washington Redskins Original Americans Foundation, introduced in 2014, as Tom put it, used a very good word, with a lot of bombast from Dan Snyder. They were making a big show of demonstrating how they were going to do some good for a lot of Native American tribes, which I think was a very welcome thing. And Tom, could you go into some of the reaction among various Native American communities to this? Some, I think it seemed like, you know, welcomed any assistance. Others didn't want to be used as they perceived it as maybe pawns in some sort of PR campaign. Just kind of go into some of the disparate reactions that you saw in your reporting.
Yeah, those are really the two kind of camps that have developed. I mean, you've had some kind of tribes and reservations that have basically said, you know, look, you know, we don't want a burgundy and gold colored playground built, you know, even if it is going to be, you know, essentially donated, because we don't want to become, you know, like a pawn, basically, in this fight over the team name. Now, you have had other people. I spoke to somebody with the Lower Blue Sioux tribe in South Dakota earlier this morning, who, you know, is basically like, you know, if they're going to help us, we want the help. You know, anything that's going to help kids in their communities, you know, is still welcome. And so it was interesting, you know, especially early on in the foundation, 2014, 2015, you saw a lot of kind of tension in various Native American communities over that. And I think, you know, there's still probably some of it here today, but obviously the decline in charitable giving has made it less notable.
Tom Shad on Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. You can check out the story in USA Today. The reporting was impressive, and it was something that when we saw it, we said, well, wow, didn't see that coming. So it's part of a much bigger convo that's going on, as you know, all around the country right now with the team name. Thanks so much. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
Absolutely. Appreciate you hopping on. Tom, who used to be here in D.C. covering the Skins for the Times, and we used to have on the Blitz quite frequently, and now covering the league in sports nationally at USA Today. I'm surprised that it's down to zero. It doesn't surprise me at all that the number would drop over the years, Danny. I think that I would have probably assumed that, as a lot of people are screaming at you to do something. You do it, you make a big show about it loudly, and then as time goes on, the number might decline. But to see $0, if in fact, you know, what he found in his reporting checks out, that takes you back a little bit.
So here's the timeline, right? They engage with this PR company, talking about the team, the ownership group. And in the Les Carpenter story now, a guy that was part of that team, that was basically assigned to his case, is now advising him at a high level on Redskins' name stuff. Okay, you could do some of the math there. And this was part of that PR campaign. Redskins Facts was a big part of that PR campaign. Going out in public, hiring Lanny Davis was a big part of it. A guy that joined... that came on the station and answered some really hard questions. He's like the crisis PR guru, Seth Davis's dad. Then you add in this effort and endeavor, right, where you're trying to make a big show of, well, you guys are, it's basically counter to, you guys are just using Native American imagery for your own profit. It's a counter saying, okay, well, look at the good we're doing for Native Americans. What are you doing about that? Is kind of a way to, you know, to hold the mirror up to some of your critics. And as attention fades, as you correctly pointed out, so too does the interest, so too then do the dollars and actual good of the foundation. So it confirms what everybody thought it was. The same way you have a guy that claims to be a Native American on the Larry Michaels you know, propaganda show, Chief Dotson, who turns out was a big fraud, I think. This is kind of along those same lines. It's part of a big PR campaign to try to deflect attention and to sort of change the narrative of what your critics say is actually happening. And, you know, this sort of bears out here with a $0 donated in the year 2019.
with the leftovers and the best of the rest, as we always do in our final segment, as well as this date in Nats history. It's next on Grant and Danny. Final few minutes of Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. Let's kick off our final segment, as we always do, by traveling back in time. Today is July 8th, 2020, so we go back on this date to 2007, 13 years ago. Mr. National, Ryan Zimmerman, hitting a big two-run home run to help get a win. A random Nat, let's play random National, Tim Redding on the mound that day.
Tim Redding!
Pitched six innings for his first big league win since September of 2004. So he had gone 3 years between victories. This date in Nats history.
Capuano is ready. 1-0 the count to Zimmerman. Here's the pitch. Swinging a fly ball deep to left down the line. Going back is Gross, and it is gone! Into the Brewers' bullpen! Ryan Zimmerman, a two-run homer. Number 14 for Zimmerman. The Nationals have the lead right back. It's 3-2.
That was off of Duke's Chris Capuano, a guy that I had no success with in my couple at bats in amateur baseball, but a lot of blasts in the past there. That was that Nationals pitching staff where you just throw a bunch of stuff at the wall and just see what happens. Let's just toss a couple guys and see if we can come up with a staff. But nice to have Ryan Zimmerman break through there. It'd be the first of many important hits for old Zim. That was fun.
The amount of Zim in our this date in Nats history,
a lot of them,
tells you everything you need to know about his import to this organization. And it makes you think about maybe not adding to that pile anymore of highlights. He is not going to play this year, and who knows if he'll be back next year. If I had to bet with some money, I would tell you that I think he'll get a one-year deal. He's too tight with the learners. He's got too good a relationship with Mike Rizzo, and you get him back in the fold, particularly if there's a DH again next year, which I guess as of right now is somewhat unlikely. But you see what he can do, and you kick the tires and see if he can make the roster and help you out as a veteran right-handed bat against left-handed pitching where he's been a career 313 hitter or something like that. But certainly not a guarantee. You keep your fingers crossed for him because you'd hate to see his career end based on COVID-19, like so many companies and restaurants that got shut down. And you don't want Zim added to that pile.
If there's a way to go out, World Series champion, guy with a couple major swings in the postseason, they don't beat Milwaukee without his single off of Hader. They don't beat Houston in game number one without his homer to bloody Garrett Cole. Just to prove that they could. They don't beat – well, maybe they do beat the Dodgers in that one game with his giant homer off Baez. But the point is, some big swings for Zim in that postseason. And we always played this game with the Caps and the Nats. Man, you forget about fill in the blank. Like, you know who had a great postseason? Dot, dot, dot. And some great defensive plays over there. So if this is it, and I'm with you, I certainly hope it's not. And I'm going to miss just celebrating him this year in this weird little 60-game sprint, and I'll take – you know, every chance I get to see him on television that I can get until he's ready to hang him up because of what he's meant to this community, this organization, and everything else. But I'm with you. I hope it's not it. I really, really do. But if it is, you could go out in worse ways, having that be your last memory.
All right, let's go round the horn, DC Sports notes of the day in case you're just jumping in the car, just getting radio.com fired up. Among the things you need to know, Max Scherzer threw 48 pitches over three innings today against his teammates, according to Davey Martinez. He, as of right now, is progressing toward being able to start the opener for the Nationals against the Yankees on July 23rd, which is only now 15 days away. On the Redskins front, we just talked about the one big story of the day that came out on a national level with the USA Today unearthed. But on a local level, it sounds like it is possible, according to the Washington Post and sources that Les Carpenter has talked to, that the Redskins could make the announcement of their new name, their new logo, if indeed they make that change within the next couple of weeks before the start of training camp. And then, meanwhile, on the hoops front with the Wizards, Tommy Shepard talked yesterday about Bradley Beal not participating in the restart in the final eight games of the year for the Wizards. He says, don't worry long term, Beal will be fine for next year.
He's worked religiously to get this thing back to where it feels right, and it just hasn't felt right. And it's not something that we're looking at that it's going to be a long-term problem, not at all. But wisdom would tell you if it's bothering him right now, let's not go out there and try to do anything that's going to hinder his future.
Exactly
no
right,
reason
Tommy
to
Shepard.
Push it.
Yeah.
Don't ask him to do anything for these eight games that matter so little. That could even ruin a week of his offseason.
100%. What is this about? What is this year about? What are the next several years about? This was always about finding running mates for if and when John Wall comes back. Beal has ascended into stardom. He was already very good, and he turned himself into a bona fide star with the way that he played this year. That's done. That's settled. That's settled, and you don't have to worry about it anymore. This was about figuring out, is it Rui? Is it Troy Brown? Is it some of these guys you traded for? Is Thomas Bryant something? Now you let those kids go about it. You could still fulfill the mission of what this season was about, and I like this philosophy from the Wizards. Don't do anything stupid.
Pivoting to the Caps for just a moment, Emily Kaplan of ESPN saying she was told today that the NHL is going to have three start times and three games in each of their two hub venues in Edmonton and Toronto. So at noon, 4, and 8 p.m. East times, games will be played. So it could be very NCAA tournament-like. The Caps obviously wouldn't be playing multiple games in a day, but where you're seeing back-to-back-to-back games all televised, which would be really, really cool. And
what a way to do it.
Caps fans, if they get going, and the NHL seems to be doing okay so far, we don't have the baseball stories that are ominous coming out about hockey just yet. Mm-hmm. We'll see if that changes as players start to show up. But that's a team that has a legitimate chance to win the Cup, and what a fun couple of weeks it would be if they got on a roll in whatever this weird restart that the NHL is going to be doing is, the tournament that they've got with 24 teams.
Yeah, imagine. Imagine how much fun it would be if they start going. Oh, that would be really, really cool.
Fingers crossed, man. We need it. For Brendan and Thommy in our D.C. studios and Danny Grant saying so long, really appreciate you listening. You can rewind on radio.com or go to thefandc.com for podcast and show. Chad's up next. We will chat with him at 10 a.m. tomorrow.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.